Can we think toward a 15-minute conclusion now?
Oh, has it been that long? Okay. Well, that's good. Okay, sure. I didn't mean to take so much time.
Not at all. No.
But let me put it this way. I was attending an affordable housing meeting where there was an adjunct individual who was very prominent in town, whose family goes back a ways. And I was the only one in the audience, and he didn't know me. And so he was bold enough to say, well, there was a time when some of us in town wanted to buy the town and make all the residents tenants. But we couldn't do that because we couldn't get the money for it. He was dead serious. He wasn't joking. So what has been developed in the consequence of that is what's called the Concord Land Conservation Trust. They own about 40% of the town. What happens, the town, and it's open space largely, the town buys this property, hands it over to the Concord Land Conservation Trust. They manage it and make money off the management. And when you go to walk on that property, they can be very vicious. I had a woman come to me one time who had just moved to Concord. She had bought a piece of property in an area, had some white broadboard, you know, fences in it, and they needed paint. And so it was on her property. So she and her husband painted these nice white fences, made it look nice. And she was out there when along came this individual and another individual and turned her into tears. Don't you know that this is conservation land and you have to have our permission to even paint it? It's this attitude. And the attitude was the same people backed what's called the Concord Preservation Act. The state said, look, we'll give you 100% matching funds if you opt for a surcharge on the taxes of so much. Well, it turns out the town opted for 1.5% and the state had only given about 56% of matching funds. But they've used that now. They've got something like $7 or $8 million that they've spent on all kinds of things, but they're the ones that decide how to spend it and how it's going to be spent, who gets it. And they come to town meeting, and they have to have town meeting's approval for the disbursement of these funds. Well, it turns out that the town, and I'm going very, very quickly here, so the town is now in the process of building a $100 million high school that doesn't meet the requirements that they presented to the town originally that voted it. And there's been a great scandal about it in the town for the last 2 or 3 years. The school committee believes that they're above accountability, as most places, and they decided that on a number of options, which I won't go into all the details, but one of the things that they were getting money from the state through what's an outfit called the MSBA, is a state agency that funds these programs. And part of the regulation is that you have to have all of the options that you want on the table and costed when we decide to pay. And you are prohibited from going back to the town and getting any funding from the town, from public funds, if it's for those issues that are not on the table afterwards. Well, they ran a cost overrun, egregious cost overrun for this school committee, and the building committee for this high school. And so they had to cut some things out, which happened to be playing fields, tennis courts, playing fields, amphitheater, a few things like that they wanted for sports. And those are very desirable things. It was a shame that they had to do it, but they had to cut it out because the overrun. So what happened? The school committee decided a little maneuver, and this is still in fight right now, going on right now. The maneuver was this. Let's request some people to set up a private organization to get donations so we can build this stuff. But we'll also get donations from the town. The town will support part of this. Well, it turns out that the organization that they set up, two of the individuals on the school committee were married to two of the individuals on the in the organization, conflict of interest. Plus, what they were doing was clearly a violation of the MSBA rules. They were not supposed to be getting public funds at all. Now, if they want to have private donations, okay. But then there's a question to the town has, well, should we even allow private donations to public facilities like this? Because then you have the problem of maintenance and long-term support. And so these people, a private organization, may commit the town to something they don't want. Well, of course, they're saying, well, we all want these wonderful schools. Well, basically what they violated, that they don't recognize, is that pragmatism does not trump due process. There are many good things that I want. Now, if I choose to steal them, that's a violation of due process. Or if I deceive somebody, or if I break the rules in getting it, I'm now using my pragmatism to trump due process. And, as a matter of fact, that's exactly what they did in town meeting. They came asking for $433,000 to fund this group called Concord Carlisle at Play, who got this, they got beautiful ideas for playing fields and everything, all things that we really like to have to do. But they asked for $433 of public funds from who? The CPA that I mentioned earlier. And I stood up and just said what I told them. I said it in the meeting. I says, this is a backdoor attempt to get around the MSBA rules. I did not mention the conflict of interest between these people because that would have been a little bit too, but it's there. And they went into a tizzy. The guy violated the amount of time that he was given to speak. He had to be shut down firmly. They didn't want anybody to know this. And this is going to be resolved in the future, possibly by a referral to the MSBA and to the State Ethics Commission. That's a possibility. But it's this kind of exploitation of the system. It is a pragmatic thing. Postmodernism. And let me maybe that's the way I can finish this thing off. Go ahead.
If there wasn't town meeting, the public wouldn't get to hear your voice.
I got up I stood up and I was recognized, but I might very well have, they might have called a question before I got up. They did hear my voice and they didn't like what I had to say.
Would you be satisfied to not have that kind of public voice, or would you find it elsewhere?
Oh no, I insist that public voice should be there, but I think that the voting on it should not be done at town meeting. It just because you have to be physically present. I think the whole town can vote on it.
Oh, but so you do want there to be that public discourse?
Oh, of course. Discourse is absolutely essential. How can we make any legitimate moves without weighing the alternatives?
How do you want it?
But in this particular case, there was a scheme in place to circumvent the MSBA rules and regulations and to get $433,000 of public funds by that means. For something that was good, but violation of the rules. And I focused on pragmatism in this particular case because I'm going to draw on my academic
background
a little bit.
And then your discussion of postmodernism.
Yeah. Modernism basically was started with Descartes in 1600, 1635 or thereabouts, when he said, I think, therefore I am. And that's been known in philosophy as the turn to the subject. All references of value, of worth, of reason, are turned to the subject. You are the center of the world. And for about 200 years, this was caught up in what we call, in modernity, was really composed of modernism and postmodernism. Modernity was in its earliest phase, and modernism focused on the primacy of the individual. And they ran through Nietzsche and Locke and Hume, the rest of those guys, until Nietzsche came along, and he says, "You're crazy. You killed God."
What do you mean?
You put yourself in his place. That's all right with me, he said. That's okay. Because I want to go back to the Greek version. I mean, the transvaluation that the Christians introduced, I'm going to retransvaluate back to the Greek form. And his Death of History, and before 1962, there was only about two major works on Nietzsche. By the end of the 60s, there were over 1,000 works on Nietzsche. And you've seen in the 20th century the transition, starting with, of course, in the arts, where you saw this, you know, kind of strange modern art cult. But it was the loss of relative, it was a relativism. What it was is the primacy of the self is taken on a new cast. It isn't the primacy of the individual self, it's the primacy of the collective. It takes a community to do these things. You've heard that someplace? To raise a child, we have to have the community. It's the collective ego that is characteristic of postmodernism. And it's an ego, and it's still ego. So if the three of us decide that we can kill 50,000 Jews and get away with it to foster our agenda by whatever means, then it's okay if we get away with it. If it's not, well, it didn't work. That's pragmatism. Pragmatism has replaced truth in the modern world. So if you can get away with it, if these people can get their $433,000 by a scheme, fine. But now what you've done, they've become corrupt. They've corrupted the process. They corrupted all of the various boards and people that they have become complicit in this exercise. So corruption now becomes widespread within the town. And unless that's just nipped in the bud, it's going to get worse. And the arguments you heard at town meeting were pragmatic arguments. Oh, I'm proud of my son. He's part of this exercise. Oh, we got these wonderful things. If you want to worry about processes, another man said, well, but think of what we're going to get over here. We get this. It's blatant. It's blatant postmodernism. Political correctness. Oh, my goodness. Concord is the prototypical postmodern town. Because of its political correctness, there is no such thing as real right or wrong. It's what I can get away with. Maybe I can buy the town and make all the residents tenants. Maybe I can shut off all of the rest of the town from having the vote. If it works, it works. It's fine for me. And we're going to keep a beautiful town, right? Two people with two entirely different worldviews can do the same act. And the virtue of that act isn't the fact that they did it. It's what was the motivation and what was the foundations of that act.
And what was the process?
Yeah. And if we steal and we lie and we deceive as part of our process of doing, getting fine schools and fine playing fields and wonderful, beautiful town, we're rotten at the core. Concord is at that cusp in its life. It's a long ways away from when the Patriots stood at the bridge and said, you know, this is wrong, and they invoked, they had an appeal to heaven. They believed that they had divinely given rights that were not to be trampled upon. Oh, that's gone. They celebrate. I was in the Concord Minutemen. I fired at the bridge, and I did all these kind of things along with this stuff. And I really enjoyed it, and I learned a lot about American history as a consequence. I became a historian and one of the leaders in the group. But that isn't the Concord today. You wouldn't find people meeting at the bridge to fend off this. They'd join the other side. Whatever works is what goes. And if I have any complaint about Concord, it's that. It is a place where, you know, I've written weekly letters to the editor, which were basically attempts to hold people to accountability measures. And I did this for a number of years, and it got so, people so hated it, that they finally prevailed upon the Concord Journal to have a policy of only one letter a month per person. And people hated me because I was pointing these kind of things out. Now, I'm not making myself a victim. Don't misunderstand this. I'm simply saying that's the way it works. I don't expect, as a Christian, that I'm going to win most of the battles I have in a secular world. What I have to do is look at what I think the real foundations of truth, justice, and mercy are, and love. Try to implement them. You know, it says in Micah, what does the Lord require of you? But to love mercy, do justice, and walk humbly with your God. And that means you're going to die, you're going to get beaten up, you're going to be kicked around. That's not of no consequence, because there's only one thing that really counts in the final analysis. Well done, thou good and faithful servant. That's what counts. Now, that's how what I believe, and that's why I do the things I do. I don't do it because, you know, they thought, oh, you lost a town meeting. Yeah, we lost a town meeting. We're going to get up and fight and do it again. But am I optimistic that I'm going to do it and we're going to do it? No. The providence of God is at work in all this stuff. Win, lose, or draw. So we're content with that. All we have to do, all I have to do, and all of us really should do, is pursue the good as He wills it within our lives, and let Him determine the outcome. Some people will take it in the neck politically, economically, physically, because of this attitude, and they have throughout the centuries. It's a contest between two worldviews, a worldview which has the primacy of God at one end and the primacy of man at the other end. And those, you can't have God and man both prime at the same time. It's just not possible.
Thank you for stating that so clearly.
Well, thank you.
It's a cogent argument you've offered here today, and I hope people will read this transcript and think about what you've said.
Well, thank you. I hope that it'll be a benefit to somebody.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Do you have any other questions?
No, that was fine. Finally stated.